Delivery on Amazon.com is so fast that there's a good chance that your order will be at your house before Hannah gets back from the voting booth. Get the best deals on everything you need and help support Rob Has a Podcast whenever you start your Amazon shopping with our link, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, it's robhasawebsite.com/AmazonCA.
The smartest guys around are about to break it down like they've won the game a million times.
Well, actually, they didn't really win the game at all.
Survivor know-it-alls.
Yes, that's right. The Survivor Know-It-Alls are back together for the first time here in Millennials versus Gen X. Stephen Fishback, how are you?
Wow, what a crazy episode. I think a lot of people's winner pick just got eliminated from the game.
Nicole Stradamus.
Oh, was she Mari?
You know nothing, Nicole.
Oh my God. Wow. Well, after last week, I think a lot of people were like, Mari's getting the winner in it. She's strategically controlling the game. She's marshaling. I said that in my blog. I said that here with Tyson last week. You know, Mari's got this counter alliance thing happening. And 3 days later, she's smuffed.
I'm salty, Stephen. I'm salty about this whole thing.
Oh my God, I loved it. I loved it. I was so sad to see Mari go, but I thought Michelle played it so well. And there's nothing I think either of us like more than seeing someone really play a smart, strong game. And I think there's so much that Michelle did well here. I thought there was so much that David did well on the Gen X tribe. And I thought there was so much that Jeff did well as a host. I'm excited to talk about all of it.
All right, lot to talk about. Yeah, I feel like this is the official kickoff of Millennials versus Gen X. I was a little underwhelmed with the premiere episode. Of course, happy to have Survivor back, but I didn't think there was a ton of for us to sink our teeth into.
It was hard.
Week.
They had the that's why you ditched, huh? Because you were like, yeah, let the B squad handle this one.
That wasn't why, but then I said, okay, that was a good one to skip.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the evacuation, it was like interesting drama, but not a lot to talk about from the strategic point of view. And then they voted out, Rachel, who was right. Of course, you're going to vote out Rachel.
A lot to set up here tonight. So excited to be back here with Steven, not talking about Australian Survivor tonight, talking about Survivor US.
Yeah. Thank God. Thank God.
How dare you? How dare you, Steven?
But it is interesting. I mean, we'll talk about it later. But like, this is such a tightly edited show where every second counts and every little moment is meaningful. Like, it's such a relief to watch this.
Okay. Yeah. Don't walk away. Don't walk away, anybody. All right. So, of course, that's just like Survivor Know-It-Alls, too. So here's what we're going to do. Hashtag RJP. Scott St. Pierre is following the hashtag. We're going to bring your questions into the show. And then we kick off. Very busy week on the podcast. Tomorrow, I will be speaking with Mari, get a chance to hear what she has to say about this first tribal council and this blind side. Looking forward to that. Then, Steven, your friend and mine, PG Law, is going to be here in the studio tomorrow. Wow. And live in the studio. Well, we won't be live, but she'll be here in the studio.
You know, I can't believe you give me crap for like a little bit of comparison with Survivor Australia and you give your 10-minute spiel about the upcoming podcasts.
Yeah, well, people want to know what's coming up next because then we're going to have voicemails with Darnell Hamilton. So that's going to be very exciting as well. So
that
get your voicemails in.
Yeah, you do have a big week coming up.
It's a big week. Okay. And of course, we have a new feature this season. You can send in emails to the show, especially if you have an email, like a long form question for PG. Send them in.
You've been able to send in emails for about 20 years.
Not to the show. Survivor@robhasawebsite.com. Normally we just take questions on Facebook, but I wanted to open it up if people want to have a longer question, a more thought provoking question for the recap guest. Survivor@robhasawebsite.com. All right, Stephen. So let's dive into this first tribal council. First off, let me ask you about Mari. Do you feel like she did anything wrong?
Wow, that's a really good question. What did Mari do wrong? Well, that's really a question for David Bloomberg.
It is a question for David Bloomberg.
Yeah, but I clearly there were things happening on that tribe that Mari was not in control of, right? Obviously. There were alliances being made. There was pressure being exerted. And that pressure then ended up getting her voted out of the game. So like, that
why was it her and not Zeke that went out tonight?
That's a good question. And that is a good question. And I think it may come down to the fact that Zeke may have had those better relationships. You know, I think one thing we need to talk about is Zeke's decision to talk to Jay, right? Clearly a terrible decision. That's why Mari goes home. That's why Zeke's alliance is blindsided. But it does also testify to the fact that Zeke is friends with Jay. You know, Zeke has a relationship with Jay. So maybe Zeke has more relationships. You know, last week when we saw Mari talking about the outcast, you know, with Hannah, you know, that wasn't Zeke. You know, we never saw Zeke in that group. So maybe Zeke is more, I mean, this is speculative, but maybe Zeke is more in between the two tribes. What do you think? Why Mari?
I don't really know. The only thing that I can come up with is because she seemed like the most threatening player in this group. And I wonder if it was a mistake for her to be so public with this notion of I play video games for a living. And I wonder if people were threatened by her success.
Yeah. And I think the fact that she really did, it really seemed like last week she spearheaded this kind of like counter group. And I think it may not even just be success. It's like this, you know, I'm a strategic person for my life. Like you're setting yourself up as a narrative of like, I'm a strategist out here. And then it's easy for someone like Michelle to go to Will and say, Mari's the strategic one, you know, like Daffy Figgy is an easy vote later. We all know what she's up to.
Daffy Figgy?
You know, like she's like, oh, Figgy. That's basically what Michelle said.
What are you, like Trump when you make up nicknames for people now?
I use an adjective, you know, without being compared to Trump.
Daffy Figgy. What a disaster.
Yeah.
Couldn't believe it. Yeah. She was macking it with Jay.
Another
Taylor, line. Sorry.
So I think, well, you know, that was what Michelle did really intelligently was say, you know, she kind of like said like, oh, Figgy's no threat. You know, Figgy's off. You know, we all see what she's up to, but Mari's the real threat. And maybe, you know, maybe you're right. Mari didn't have a chance because of this persona she had as a gamer.
Yeah, let's talk about this movement that Michelle started. And Michelle, again, very strong job. Did you feel like that she was selling past the close? It ended up in the final tally of being seven votes against Mari, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So Mari, Adam, and Zeke all voted for Figgy, and everybody else on the tribe all voted for...
Yeah, so the Hannah vote really ended up being inconsequential, and it ended up being the kind of thing where it's at tribal council, it seemed very dangerous, and maybe it was just a case of Michelle not being confident in the votes she already had, but it ends up being seven in total. Do you feel like that she did too much? Should she have been let the Hannah thing go?
Well, I don't think so, and first of all, like you saw that tribal council, there was a lot of animosity between Michaela and Figgy, you know, a lot of back and forth. You know, if Michelle is sitting there listening to this happen, she has every reason to think, oh my gosh, like my whole spot is getting blown up. You know, Michaela's going to vote against us. Like, yeah, the votes all came down on her side. You know, that speaks to what a great job she did of convincing people and kind of like gathering the vote at the last minute. But it also, you know, you don't know until the votes are read, and it's such a crucial decision. You see this, but you know, right next to you, everyone is talking about this Taylor Figgy relationship. Like that is the big conversation of tribal council. And then, you know, so why not go for that last push? You know, why not try to recruit that last person? And I thought it was so smart. Like I can't even think, I mean, it certainly happened at tribal council before where people, you know, have switched their votes. It's very unusual. You know, chaos has happened at the last minute. Everyone's like vote for this person or vote for that person. You know, like Russell did it in Heroes versus Villains. But how often does it happen when someone comes in and almost out of the blue sort of tries to exert this pressure at tribal council and use the kind of intensity that tribal council is and the confusion that's happening in order to get their plan passed? I thought it was really genius of Michelle.
especially when the reason is, I'll tell you later.
I'll tell you
vote,
later.
Vote for this person. I'll tell you later. Trust me.
Yeah.
But Stephen, I want to get into something that you had referenced earlier, that you were so happy with the way that Jeff handled everything. And I did feel like that Jeff was taking a bit of a kid glove approach to this millennial tribe. And I wonder if it had to do with the fact that they were so young, that Jeff doesn't want to be seen as somebody who's really just hammering away at these kids, or be perceived as sort of like the warden or the substitute teacher of like, hey, you kids, you better be paying attention. Like, Jeff seemed very easygoing and very go with the flow at this tribal council tonight, when I feel like that in with less craziness going on, I think you've seen Jeff pounce on things like this.
Well, I think you see it happen, Jeff pounce, when it's like whispering breaks out kind of out of nowhere, and not necessarily as much when it's a strategic plan. And I think that's one of Jeff's real strengths, is that when the contestants have a strategic plan that they're trying to put into place, he's going to let them do it. Now, what I thought was really interesting, and one of the reasons I love Jeff's performance at Tribal so much tonight, was that as soon as that conversation breaks out, Jeff asks Hannah a question, but an unrelated question. He asks Hannah something like, who have you noticed has been cuddling in the shelter or something like that? And I thought that was great. It's like, Jeff is going to let them have their strategic conversation, but they're going to have to cover their asses. And Jeff knows, you know, that they're whispering, that there's some plan going on, but he's also putting them on the spot. So if they can successfully cover their asses, if they can dodge the bullet, then you get to keep on having that conversation. And if not, then you've got to, you know, then you're in the crosshairs. And in fact, Jeff doesn't bring up the conversation again until Figgy does. And it's only when Figgy says, I was listening to this conversation, that then Jeff again turns the attention back and says, hey, what's happening? He gives Jay a question. Jay dodges really well. I thought Jay like had an excellent dodge. He gives Hannah a question. Hannah kind of like fumbles it, but dodges nonetheless. And then Jeff lets it go back. And I thought it was so awesome the way he applied the pressure when the opportunity arose. And then when they dodged, he's like, all right, you know, you dodged the bullet. You get to keep on planning. Then right at the end, right before the vote, he brings the attention back one last time, gives everyone else on the tribe a chance to, you know, figure out what's happening. Nobody, you know, a bunch of people speak up, right? They're like, I want to know what's up. I want to know what's up. Mari, you know, in a moment, I'm sure she's going to regret for the rest of her life, is the one who says, oh, it's just Hannah being Hannah. I'm sure it's nothing. And then, you know, he shuts it down. The end.
Yeah. I believe her quote was, it's probably just Hannah. Hannah being Hannah, you know, talking about either puppies or butts.
Yeah, puppies and butts.
You know, the kinds of things that people whisper about at tribal council all the time.
What do you think? I mean, what did Mari think was happening there?
I don't know. I really felt like that Mari, Zeke, and Adam, that other Triforce, I felt like that they were at a real disadvantage, that they were so far away from the action happening on the other side of Tribal Council. Steven, now, is it a thing that they will tend to sit in alliance with each other? I mean, I felt like that the fact, if they would have been more spread out, I felt like if Zeke would have been further down in the row, I felt like that some of this could have been prevented. At least, you know, maybe at least the Hannah vote, I felt like, could have been prevented if had the seating been different.
Yeah, it's interesting how much like little circumstantial things like that really do sort of end up having an impact on the game. I mean, you know, the other interesting thing is, to your point, like it didn't really impact the vote, but you know, like that's the kind of like circumstance that like happens in every tribal council. There's a seat, you know, people are seated and like either they're taking advantage of their seating arrangement or they're not. You know, are you whispering to your allies? Are you trying to recruit your enemies, or are you letting it be passive? You know, and it's funny how much it does sort of end up mattering, like who you're able to talk to, who you're able to exchange a look with, you know, and it's those little things that go into bringing a plan into fruition.
Let's talk this through from Hannah's perspective, because of course she does ultimately make the right call. She votes with the numbers, but the way
yes, she votes with the numbers, but she also deeply pisses off her allies, Adam and Zeke, for going behind them. I mean, you know, is that the right call? Only time will tell.
Yeah, but I felt like the way that she executed that call, I really do think it's the kind of thing that you have to make a decision in the blink of an eye. And I felt like that she actually did a poor job with coming to that decision. The way that she took forever to vote, and I don't ever remember Jeff having to do like the check-in of like the concerned parent, like yeah, on the bathroom
yeah.
door, like,
is she
Hannah,
still alive? Yeah.
Hannah, honey, are you okay? Is everything all right in there?
Yeah.
You okay? All right, let me know. All right, just checking. Okay,
yeah.
We'll be back here when you're ready. I felt like that was, boy, shades of Aubrey crossing out the vote for Julia last season.
Well, and the interesting thing is, like, if you look at it, right, from what Hannah knows, the plan is to vote, is to vote out Figgy. Now, suddenly Michelle's like, trust me, vote Mari. You know, give me a reason. I don't have a reason. Trust me. What do you think is going through her mind right then?
I'm sure that is going through her mind is probably like, am I being duped? Am I not being duped? But you have to make a call. I mean, at that point, that just going through the hemming and hawing is bad. It's the equivalent of writing the other person's name down, right? Where, and that when you get back to camp, right, and then Figgy says, boy, you were taking a long time thinking about voting against me, weren't you, Hannah? I mean, it doesn't even buy you that much, even though you voted the right way. Like Aubrey last season, she did vote the right way. But still, it's like, boy, you were really on the fence there. It really took a lot of convincing for you to vote with me tonight.
That's why, in a way, I think it almost would have been better for her to stick with her alliance. I mean, again, like, we'll see how this plays out, but it almost would have been better for her to stick with her alliance and be like, mm-hmm, I was, you know, stuck with my group.
She's pissed off everyone at this point. At least she wouldn't have pissed off Zeke and Adam if she would have stuck to the plan.
But we don't know. Maybe Michelle is like, wow, you really came with me when I asked, you know, how can I ever thank you for that? Like, that's awesome. You know, so it could go either way. The thing that I'm writing about in my blog for this week is the element of, like, of chronology and timing in survivor votes. And I think it's not something we ever talk about, but often the plan that gets put into action is not necessarily the best plan, but it's the last plan. You know, when you're on the beach, and this was probably very different for you, you know, back in season 8, but when you're on the beach, you know, there's so many plans being put into play, you know, so many people are proposing different things, and one plan comes and another plan comes and another plan comes. And, you know, it almost is like irrelevant what those first few are. And it's that last one, it almost like regardless of whether it's the best one, but just because that's the one that you're putting forward right before tribal council. So everyone kind of jumps on because they don't want to get left out. And you kind of saw that with Will, where Will was like, wow, it's right before tribal. I don't really love this, but like, that's what we're saying. So I guess I'm with it, you know? And I think that's probably what happened with Hannah too. It's like, this is the last one. I don't want to get left behind. I don't want to get, like, you know, left out of this. So I guess, like, and it was the most extreme example I think I've ever seen of this in the show. And I think that's why it was so exciting to see Michelle do it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think that's a thing, certainly for these first votes. I think also sometimes you see it like first vote after the merge as well, where it's just like, and I think that it was the case, especially Philippines, for instance, where, you know, if everybody's just standing around, what are we doing? What is the plan? What do you got? What do you got? What do you got? And so I think it's especially maybe the millennials didn't even really anticipate going to tribal council this early. I think that maybe they felt like they were going to be made in the shade for a while against these Gen Xers. So it really did catch them by surprise that things were going to be this tense, or at least for after the events of last week's episode, that people felt pretty safe that it was going to be one of these Triforce people.
But I just think, you know, like it changes so quickly. And I remember being in Cambodia, you know, where like I would just like check out for the first couple hours because it was like, you know, it's going to change 1,000 times. Like, let's come in at the end, then we'll lock it up, you know, with whatever the plan should be. And then we'll, you know, then we'll, and a lot of people, you know, there was no reason to be involved in like those initial kind of those early scrambles. You know, and in fact, if anything, I probably scrambled too much anyway. It's crazy. So I agree with you. The Triforce, you know, maybe everyone just assumed it was such an easy vote. You know, they were a minority. Like, you had that whole thing with Figgy and then like the fact that anyone was playing at all seemed to really take them by surprise. You know, let's talk about Zeke's decision to go talk to Jay, right? You know, they had this thing locked up. Zeke tells Jay tells Michelle tells Michaela, you know, then Jay tells, you know, then suddenly everything is spiraling out of control. I mean, on TV, obviously you're getting a kind of binary, it's this alliance versus this alliance much more than it is in real life. But what did you think? Is there any, when Zeke did that, before we knew how it played out, was there any part of you that was like, yeah, Zeke, like roping in everybody?
Yeah, I didn't really strike me as a big mistake at the time that it happened. But looking back, I mean, that is, you know, the first snowball on the snowboard mountain for the Triforce that ultimately saves the day. Because if they're able to just not tell them what the vote is going to be, then word doesn't get back to Michelle. I mean, it's the kind of thing where you need to keep other people involved with what the fake plan is going to be. And they didn't do a good job with that.
Yeah. And I think that does go back to what you're saying, which is that, you know, it's that sort of first few days, you know, no battle lines have been drawn. You know, there's kind of this sense of like, oh, we're all in this together. Like, who knows? And maybe Zeke and, you know, and Jay are better friends than we see. But it was careless.
So fishy for Michelle.
Oh, yeah. I thought she was awesome. And the other thing that I think was so good about her and Jay, too, you know, is the way that they approached each person differently. You know, with Michaela, they went up to her and they were like, you know, if you don't stick with us, you're going to be voted out. You know, Zeke's targeting you next. And with Will, they were very strategic. You know, Mari's the bigger strategist. Figgy's not as dangerous. You know, this is the strategically right move. And with Hannah, they kind of went for this like last minute press. So it was really interesting to me how they really use different tactics to sway different people. And I thought that was really smart.
All right. Let's talk about the very public courtship of Figgy and Taylor. And Steven, this is really, unprecedented. I mean, this is the first actual people. What is it? Macking it? Is that the right term?
I think there's some precedence with Ozzy and Amanda.
Well, I was going to say since going back to the days of yore of the Micronesia.
Yeah. And we don't think there was any macking it with Angie and Malcolm.
Oh, boy. I don't know. I don't know that you would have to ask Malk about that. I don't believe that was the case. I believe that was just sort of like huddling for warmth. But this is really the first time that we've had kissing on Survivor in quite some time.
Yeah, it is really gross. I mean, you know, Michaela, who is my new like favorite, is like, you know,
no, she's the best.
Your mouth stinks. You've got sand in your drawers. Like, I love that quote.
Michaela is all of us. Yes.
Yeah. 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 And her eyebrows really are so great. Like, just her like expressions of disbelief, you know, are so amazing.
No, she's really, really fantastic. I really could not believe it. I guess to millennials, Steven, hooking up is no big deal.
Yeah.
Well, that's what the word is.
The thing is, it is a big deal for like everyone, but the people who are doing it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
I this is just insane. I'm very excited. I'm pumped up to see where exactly this all could go.
You know, if Nicole was out there with you and you found love, you know, would you let the rules of the game get between you and love?
Steven, this kind of thing doesn't happen in my house where there's toothpaste and shower gel and no sand in anybody's drawers.
Yeah.
I should be so lucky, Steven.
You guys live in LA. You can go to the beach.
Yeah, I guess so. But so here's to Figgy and Taylor. Jay was very fun tonight also. In his response to all of this, where
he looks like Harry Styles, but he's got so much wit and so much humor and so much skill. I was really impressed with Jay.
Yeah, he was very fun talking about this. Although he says that these couples, I mean, this is like the target for a nuclear bomb, and they never get far. They never, ever, no couple has ever made it to the end in this game, Steven.
Well, obviously, we all sort of thought about Boston Rob and Amber, but like, you know, I think the point is that almost because of Boston Rob and Amber, no couple will ever make it to the end in the game again. You know, it's like that sort of set the problem, you know, that laid out the issue, and now it can never happen again.
Yeah. Except when you were calling for John Mish to make it to the final two with Jacqueline.
I still think John Mish won that season.
He did. Yeah. I think he did. You want to talk about Gen X? Anything else from the millennials?
I mean, we talked about certainly, you know, I love Zeke still. We haven't talked about why Adam is shouting. Why is Adam shouting?
He's so excited. He's just like that. It's funny where you have some of these people that are like the younger people who just really like grew up with the show. I mean, I was excited when I was on the show, and I think a lot of people have been excited about being on the show, and you've seen Cochran like that. But I do think that there's something to these people that like Survivor has been around like their entire lives, and that they get on it, and they're a little bit like Price is Right contestant when they get down to contestants row. And I think that might be where Adam is in this. Yeah. He's very enthusiastic to be on the show.
And it really is magical walking into Tribal Council that first time. Like, the set design is so impressive that it's like, wow, you've like taken me into this crazy TV world. Like, I am inside my television.
Yeah, so you can understand why he's pumped up. All right, speaking of people that are excited to be there, we have David, who was on the ropes, certainly, yeah, and was marked as a target from Paul, who seems to be the person who at least feels like he's calling the shots.
Yeah.
But a little bit of a bounce back with David getting the fire started.
Yeah.
But not quite enough that people are still saying he's going to be the first one out. But he does find the idol this week, Stephen.
Yeah, he found the idol. Kind of amazing. Like, he was just looking in trees. And then his eye, like, happened to fall on this coconut that had the tribe design. I mean, that's pretty, you know, pretty awesome. That must have been a pretty sweet feeling to see it and just to, like, well, be like, wow, this is. I mean, because, you know, totally innocuous thing, right? That coconut with a little bit of paint on it until you're really looking at it.
Yeah. Did you like the way that they did that? I thought that was going to be a bigger thing this season.
I thought it was going to be harder. This season,
we heard about, oh, it's going to be in the shells and it's going to be hard to find. It just was a coconut with paint on it.
Yeah. In some ways, it seemed actually easier than it being in some random tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's a coconut that has paint on it, and crack open this surprise egg and, like, oh, it's the immunity idol.
Yeah. I liked it more at the challenge. I thought that was actually more fun.
Yeah. It just seemed very anticlimactic, this idea of it being in the, like, it was. If they were going to change it, it feels like a change in the wrong direction from the most recent innovation that they did.
Yeah. And even in 32, right, where it was like in a tree and you had to have like multiple people kind of get it. I mean, or you could get it with a huge stick. You know, it was much more of a production to get it, which I actually prefer. I mean, we'll see. Maybe this was an aberration. Maybe this was sort of like, wow, David happened to stumble on it. But I liked it. The challenge thing was really cool. I hope they go back to that, you know, and give that a chance to breathe. Yeah.
So David ends up finding the idol. He shares it with his new buddy, Ken, who I didn't get to talk about as much in the podcast last week as I would have liked to, but I felt like that, he's had a very strong 2 weeks.
Ken has.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell me why. Cause a lot of people liked him last week. I didn't get a big sense of him last week.
Well, I really thought that coming into the season that I thought he was just going to be way too granola and flighty,
right,
to be a serious contender in this game. But I do think that he definitely has a sensitive side to him, but he also has the ability to be a provider. And I do think that maybe if there was one area which you say that he might be lacking, might be from a strategic sense, but he was the one who was really making the case to Paul about, hey, we can't overlook these millennials. If we start to underestimate them, that's where we're going to get
into trouble. Is that strategic? Like, let's not, some, like, you know, rah-rah speech out of any football movie of, like, let's not underestimate our competitors. I don't know if that's, like, strategy per se. Now,
okay.
Listen, I thought that Ken with David this week, they had a real good thing going, but, like, I don't think that was the baseline for it.
Well, I do think that if you were going to nitpick one area of his game, you say, okay, well, maybe he doesn't have the strategy down, but then you have the other half of this, the David half of the equation, which if he could sort of just like gain some confidence and get some a little bit of it, have a trusted ally, could this be the new Steven and JT?
There's something there. You know, there is something there. And I think the fact that that's bond is built over an idol, as you know, I love the Idol Alliance. You know, I've been a little bit skeptical about it recently because I felt like idols have become such, you know, certainly on returning player seasons, an idol is such a huge target, but I think David really used it perfectly. It seems like Ken is not going to be the type of guy to like freak out by the fact that David has an idol, and run around like telling everyone. He was like the perfect guy to use it with. And it really seemed to cement that bond between them. I thought it ended up being a great dynamic. And yeah, it did seem to like they kind of complemented each other's strengths there.
We also had a scary moment in the episode where Paul looked as though he was going into cardiac arrest. Survivor Medical came out, but he was pronounced fine. They let him stay in the game. Steven, I was talking about on the podcast that we did with David Bloomberg this week, where I felt like that Survivor was going to have a faster trigger finger on pulling people out of the game post Ko-Rong, especially that might have been one of the reasons why they went with a 20-person season. So if anybody is potentially even borderline, that they were going to pull them out of the game. So I was a little surprised when we had Paul stay in the game after having such a serious episode.
I don't know. I think there's a difference between someone who's had, you know, is being dehydrated and someone who's having like renal failure on the beach, right? I mean, there's a pretty big gulf there. You can't suddenly be yanking someone every time their hands go numb. I wasn't surprised that they kept him in the game, given that he wasn't having a heart attack. Now, if they'd kept him in the game, if he had been having a heart attack, that would have been surprising.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that's a fair point. Yeah, that wouldn't be surprising if they did that. So do you think that Paul is over this, or do you think that he is somebody who you would think potentially we could have more issues like this?
And Paul's not winning.
Okay. Well, that's not exactly what I asked.
What are you asking? Is if he's going to get sick again? I don't know. What are you asking me?
Are you concerned about him?
No, he
don't
was
seem
dehydrated.
That concerned. He seemed very callous and cavalier about
this
whole thing.
I'm concerned about every human being who has to suffer through this veil of tears. But Paul, specifically on Survivor, I think he's doing fine.
Yeah. Now, he's being set up as sort of the person who is the leader of the six. He's calling the shots. Do you feel like that he is along for this game in terms of the votes?
No, I don't think so. I think he probably is an early target for that tribe, right? It seems like... You know, the story that's being told is not Paul's story, you know, to preempt any conversations about storytelling and not say edit, but to say story. The story is the story of David and Ken, right? They recruited Cece. We didn't even really get Chris or Brett that much here, you know, just kind of Chris's only comment was about David. So I really feel like the story here is going to be David and Ken, and at least in the short term, we're going to see them blossom.
One other thing from tonight before we start to get into the questions. So Michaela got into this big fight with Figgy earlier in the episode, and it was very fun, and looking forward to seeing more of Michaela versus Figgy, hopefully this season. But Michaela ultimately votes to keep Figgy around.
Yes.
Steven, did you like that move for Michaela?
I thought, given, you know, if she has the read that Zeke may actually be targeting her next, I think that's the move, right? You got to go with the numbers. And I think, you know, it's more a testament to Michelle for me than it is a testament to Michaela's decision. But I mean, no,
is that,
right?
Is that the right move?
No.
Is it better to keep somebody in the game who you've had a big blow up with, or are you better off with getting rid of the person who you don't like, who doesn't like you, who would throw you under the bus because of you heard that you might be the next person out of the game? I think I might have to disagree with that.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, from Michaela's perspective, it's probably not the right move to go with someone who, but there's something kind of like wonderful. And it's like, you know, it goes back to like Kasaya, right, on Survivor Panama, where there you had this insane dysfunctional tribe who hated each other, but they were so cohesive in voting together. And like, there's something that you kind of, as a viewer, you love about that, right? If they can maintain this and just be like hot blooded and, you know, express themselves like the millennials they are. And then, you know, when they get into tribal council, you know, vote together, like that could be great.
Steven, did you feel bad when Jeff told the millennials, "I've got nothing for you"? I felt like that they were a little upset.
They wanted participation trophies.
They want something. It's not, you know,
I got nothing for you with these little statuettes that say you were here.
Yeah. All right. Let's dive into these.
Wait, one last thing. Is the Millennial Tribe one of the funniest tribes in the history of the show?
Yeah, they're really fun. I think that's going to be a thing. And I don't know if we're going to get a swap or not, or some sort of as they say in Australia, emerge next week.
Something's happening.
I do feel like that the Gen X tribe, while there are some, you know, bright shining stars on the Gen X tribe, I think that the Gen X tribe is a bit dry. And I do think that we have many more personalities on the Millennial tribe. And I think that's part of the reason why we had a little more excitement in this episode.
Well, we assume that it's going to three tribes next week, right? Like, that's my assumption. At 18, they're probably going to go three tribes.
It would seem odd to go from two tribes of 10 to do a swap to two tribes of 9 after two episodes. That would seem odd.
If what they're doing is pulling people from both tribes, it would be pretty cool if it was a tribe of millennials, a tribe of Gen X, and a tribe of mixed generation.
That's something that we talked about in the preseason of potentially that you'd be able to sort of get more mileage out of the theme of millennials versus Gen X if you kept the millennials tribe, a Gen X tribe, and then a blended tribe.
It's a good idea. It's a good idea that Survivor had and that you obviously had many months later.
Yes. A big advantage for people that would be in that blended tribe, Steven, or do you think you'd be better off? Because you stayed on Bayon the whole way through the many merges of Survivor Cambodia. Did you feel like that was a better thing? But I guess you had other people coming in.
I think the only question, right, it's all about who you're with. If you're with your crew, then you're golden. If you're not with your crew, then it sucks. And I also think that really gets down to, you know, like we talked about this a little bit last week, but But, you know, the luck of the game is so much in who you're cast with. And if they're, God, I wish I were on that freaking millennial tribe. You know, that's like my dream tribe. There's like, you know, just a bunch of survivor nerds. Like, well, you know, what a great tribe. Like a bunch of nerdy Jewish survivor super fans. Like, what the hell? Why was I never given that? Why was I always on like the bro tribe?
I don't know. I don't know. All right, Steven, why don't we get started with our questions? All right. Tierna wants to know, are the millennials starting too early talking about alliances and numbers? No, there's no too early, right?
I don't think there's no too early, especially if you're like Figgy or you're like Michelle and you're like, you know, in fact, Jay was the one who's like, I guess they're going to vote out Figgy, our ally. And Michelle wisely thought that, let's not lose our ally. And I think, you know, I talked about this a little bit last week with Tyson, where, you know, on the one hand, it's easy to kind of ridicule that type four of Taylor, Jay, Figgy, and Michelle. But, you know, a tight foursome can be much more powerful than a loose six. And that was really what was shown this week, is if that tight foursome sticks together, you know, that loose six is easy to crumble. And, a lot of hay was made of 4 into 10, and I made some jokes myself, but, you know.
Hey, it's not a joke if you can get the other votes to get the majority. And the first part of that is getting a four. And then you have to, you know, dupe a couple other people to believing that they're in some other version of a four or a tight six. So once you have that, it's just the problem is when you don't have that, that's when you get into Brad Culpepper math or, Eddie and Reynolds math and stuff like that.
Yeah. And again, like, you know, I think when we're watching it, it seems like this group versus this group. But in reality, it becomes much more fluid.
Okay, Steven, what about Edmo?
Edmo wants to know, Edward Morris, should Michaela have been buying anything Figgy was selling? Well, you say no, right, Rob?
No, I don't think that she should have. I think that she should have stuck together with her group. I mean, there is a chance, though, that she could be the next target now that we have the Figgy Taylor. You know, if Figgy decides that, hey, Michaela's got to go, I can't take Michaela anymore, she could be the next one out anyway. So I don't know necessarily what it buys her, but that there were 7 votes against the Figgy thing or against Mari. So I think she was kind of damned if she did, damned if she doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
But no, I think Michaela needs to cut ties with Figs if she can.
Yeah, I agree.
All right.
So Survivor Wire wants to know, was all the shade Michaela was throwing at Tribal a brilliant act? Or does she still dislike Figgy? What do you think? Was it all a play?
I don't think that Michaela is an actor or an actress. I think that they described her as a straight shooter. I think that she may decide to vote to stick with her, but I don't think that she's trying to dupe Mari and Zeke and Adam by pretending at Tribal Council that she doesn't like Figgy.
Yeah, I agree.
So agreeable. Derek wants to know, can we get a Periscope live reaction of Nicole Stradamus? I don't think Nicole Stradamus has seen the episode yet.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. I walked past her downstairs. I said, hey, you going to watch Survivor tonight? She said, probably. I said, you should watch it.
It's a good one.
It's a good one. You don't want to miss
Nicole,
it. Trust me.
Yeah. If you're listening to this, Nicole.
Oh, yeah.
You may be spoiled.
Right. What am I, like being held ransom that she's listening to this podcast, Steven?
Is that, would that be your, if you were held ransom, would her first go to be to listen to your podcasts?
No,
that's a deep hole.
Steven, you misunderstand. You misunderstand. That would be something that the kidnappers would demand, like, okay, if you want to see him again, you have to listen to Survivor Know It All. She's like, I can't do that.
Are your kidnappers your advertisers? Is that who's kidnapping her? Yes. Like, yes. Trying to, yeah.
Yeah, viral marketing.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
All right, Stephen H. wants to know, does Mari survive the vote if Zeke and Adam don't tell Jay they're voting out Figgy? That's the big question.
I think so. Yes. I mean, how do they know? Yeah, how do they? I mean, then they don't go. Then Jay doesn't go to Michelle, and then Michelle doesn't say we need to get out Mari. So I think that, yeah, absolutely. I hate to say it. I think you have to lay this one at the feet of Zeke until we get more information. Maybe a secret scene.
Yeah. Maybe there's a secret scene that says there's more going on here, but certainly this, you know, what we're seeing on TV, that's what happened. But they would have had to tell Jay something, right? Like, what would they have told Jay?
Voting out Michaela.
So they would have had Jay vote for Michaela, who's like, you know, pretty strong in the challenges. It doesn't make sense.
It makes sense that, boy, she's really getting Figgy worked up. We love Figgy. Figgy's the best. Yeah. Michaela, she's really causing a problem with Figgy. We can't be having that kind of turmoil. Okay. Well, no, she's a bad apple. Yeah,
you think Michaela's going to like being the decoy boot? If I'm Michaela, that alone is getting me to flip.
She's probably not going to like that. You're fair. You're right about that. All right. What about Jack?
Jack, why did Will agree to flip without a guaranteed majority? And what was Hannah thinking?
Yeah, what is this? The genius? He's going to get some sort of like guaranteed note that they're going to be in the majority? Cue the extreme ways?
Yeah. No. I mean, I really think it was a chronology thing. I think that's what it comes down to. It's like you see the plan being put in forward right in front of you. And you're like, I guess that's what's happening right now. So I'm in, you know, and it's not always necessarily, you know, the most. And there was obviously strategic logic to it, right? Mari, you know, you can certainly say is very threatening, right? She's the gamer. Let's get out the gamer while we've got the chance. She's not a, you know, a challenge beast. So there's no real reason to keep her. Yeah.
Okay. Let's take from Unicorn Street. What are the logistics of participating in swim challenges with eyeglasses? It seems dangerous. Steven, what did you do?
I never had a swim challenge, really.
Really? They didn't do swimming in Cambodia?
No swimming really in Cambodia. There was a little bit it looked like after I was
voted
out.
When you got the advantage?
Yeah, but that, you know, I didn't have my glasses on for that.
So what do? You just leave them on the beach?
Yeah, I'm you know, for me personally, like, I'm okay. You can have contacts out there, you know, if you need them. And yeah, I mean, I guess the goggles can fit over the swim challenge. I mean,
love goggles.
Love goggles can fit over your glasses. Yeah, you know, a lot of logistical things. I don't know if you're blind as a bat, you know, I don't know what you're going to do in that. I'm okay. Joe Brochacho wants to know, how Gen X is it that Chris Hammonds has a lower back tattoo? Is it the tramp stamp Gen X?
I think it probably wasn't invented before Gen X, but I have a feeling that there are some millennials out there with that too.
Yeah. Is it a tramp stamp? Possible. Does Chris Hammonds have a tramp? Would you say that Chris Hammonds has a tramp stamp?
First off, even if he did, I would not say that Chris Hammonds has a tramp stamp. Yeah. Okay.
What I'm hearing from you is that you're saying Chris Hammonds has a tramp stamp.
No, I said the exact opposite of that. I said, even if he did, I still wouldn't say it.
I would say.
He's a big guy. Yeah. He's a big guy. Yeah. Okay. Emily Crow says, how long did David wait before showing the idol to Ken? And was it more than 10 minutes?
It did seem pretty fast. I think that's to David's credit, if anything. You know, I think the longer you have something like that, you know, I don't know. What did you think? I thought he played it well. Did you like that move?
Yeah, look, that for David, I mean, he's got to throw some Hail Marys here. Yeah. I mean, he's probably going to be the next person voted out of the tribe. Yeah. So I like what he's doing to try to, you know, get up off the mat, and a tribe swap can only help him. Steven, what do you think about multiple Cochran references in the episode tonight?
First, David says, I'm more of a Cochran than an Aussie, which is not that nice about Cochran. I mean, or it is, I mean, because David seems great. So, you know, but I think the point was like, he's not a wilderness, an outdoorsman.
But I think if you're comparing yourself to Cochran, I don't think it's necessarily a dig at Cochran.
Yeah, right. And then there was the most random one, which is when Michelle is recruiting Will. You know, Will says, I don't want, you know, Figgy to get momentum. I've seen it happen before. Parvati did it. Or I've seen Parvati do it. I've seen John Cochran do it. Like, what the most, like, two random, you know.
Yeah, that's, I was having a hard time following the through line of the momentum of Parvati and John Cochran.
Are they just the two people he's seen? I thought he was like a big fan.
No, I think he's a big fan. I just don't know. I mean, maybe just like off the top of your head, it's like, oh, okay. I do think that sort of like these stories start to become apocryphal of these players. And in the retelling of it, you know, sort of like these iconic Survivor winners, it's almost like they, you know, they did no wrong in the seasons that they won.
No, Korong was Michelle.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. No, but you know, there's a lot of luck and a lot of like randomness that goes into every win. And it's not like there was some great momentum at the back of like, you know, either of those players in there, certainly at the beginning.
Yeah. I mean, if you wanted to say like, oh, you know, like Mike Holloway, you know, he had like a momentum, just won every challenge towards the end. I don't know necessarily if you say that, you know, Cochran's win was a factor of momentum.
What about Bob Crowley? Momentum? Fabio had momentum. He was so fast. He just momentum.
Guess so.
Yeah. All right. Nicholas Gibo wants to know, do you think that David, Ken, and Cece on the Gen X tribe have a chance at taking down Paul's alliance? Yes, I do.
Okay. All right. There you go.
Yeah. What do you think?
Right? Definitely a chance. I mean, that it seems like there's a stronghold right now, but we just don't know if there's going to be some sort of a switch up. And I don't think that Paul's necessarily going to play well with any of the millennials. I think that he has a good group now. I think if things stay the status quo, I think he'll be probably around at least until the merge. But if he has to, I mean, could you imagine like some sort of like Paul working with, you know, some combination of the Triforce or any of these other young people?
No. I also do think that, you know, it's so, you know, if you're on Paul's team, you know, and you saw him almost have a heart attack, you know, to your point earlier that I ridiculed, you got to be wondering about that, right? Like, you can't be thinking like this guy is sick. Like, I don't want to take the risk of his health out here.
Yeah. Very insensitive, Steven.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do two or three more questions. Jill Tapia, do you guys think that CBS would ask Mari back? She is a player that got taken out too early. Steven, is it too early to talk about a return appearance for Mari?
Well, if they did a second chance too, and Mari was in the mix, I'm assuming she could mobilize the votes. You know, there's always the Wentworth factor, right? Like, it's pretty rare for pre-merge contestants to get any kind of shot at coming back. You know, I guess, yeah, I think it's unlikely. I would love to see her. I was excited about her as a player. I hope she does get another shot, but it's not a great chance. Maybe it'll be another vote and she'll be in the mix for that and then she'll sweep it.
Yeah, I think it really will come down to how much does Mari want to do it? How much did production like her? I mean, we've seen in the past where people who were kind of a non-factor end up getting an invite back because production felt like that they gave them something. So I think that you may, if she really wants another shot at it and they have another sort of second chance or, you know, some sort of, you know, offbeat all-star season, I think that you could see her back in the mix.
Do you think Mari was hurt at all by the theme? Is there, because like, I feel like they went to Mari for a lot of like the theme quotes, you know, like, I'm a millennial and I'm used to playing 2D in the screen and I don't know about these human relationships. Yeah. Do you think that hurt her?
I don't think that was in anybody's head, but here's what I would like to shoot down. Like, I don't want to hear from people that the narrative of, oh, the video gamer, she knows how to play games, but she was bad at the social game because she spent too much time playing video games. Cause I've seen that a little bit on Twitter. And I reject that, Steven.
Why?
Because I don't think that she lost because she had a bad social game because she couldn't read people because she was too busy playing video games. And I feel like that, you know, there was a little bit of talking about, you know, Jeff brought up at Tribal Council, like, hey, the millennials, the rap on them is that they, you know, they don't use the phone and they don't text. Yeah. Is that why they have bad social games?
Yeah.
And I don't think that was a factor of, the, you know, that Mari has spent so much time playing video games that her social game is rusty. I think if anything, that I think that she was such a threat and that was the reason why they decided to get rid of her.
Right. It was because she was such a game. I mean, but again, like, I do think there's an element to the fact that she was a gamer, right? Like the fact that kind of put a target on her, the fact that she was a video gamer. And so people were threatened by that. Mm-hmm. You see it a lot with like, you know, like, so like strategic players are like, oh, you're dangerous. But, you know, it's an excuse to take someone out.
Mm-hmm. All right, Steven, last question.
All right, Andy Pfeiffer wants to know, Gen X Jessica was a star last episode. She was invisible this episode. Thoughts?
Nobody on Gen X got screen time tonight. There was basically the cold open with David and Ken, and then we saw a little bit more of like of David and Ken. Open was just David, and then we saw just David and Ken, and then Paul, you know, had a medical incident. That was it for Gen X. There was no, they didn't go to Tribal Council. And Paul's medical issues ate up two segments on their beach. So nobody on Gen X except for the guy that found the idol and the guy that killed an octopus got any screen time.
This was a huge episode. There was an idol, an octopus, a heart attack, a showmance, you know, a total blindside Tribal Council reversal. You know, there was a lot going on, you know, a big fight between Michaela and Figgy. This was an action-packed episode. You really can't ask for much more out of a Survivor episode than this.
It was a very fun hour of the show. A very tight hour, Steven. Tight 42 minutes.
It flew.
It flew like Leaf. Yeah. All right, Steven. Great job on the Know-It-Alls tonight. Once again, so nice to be back with you in the regular season of Survivor Know-It-Alls.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice. How are you? How are you doing?
No, doing great. Getting ready for some BBOTT, Steven. I know you'll be standing by the Roku tonight waiting for BBOTT to drop.
Oh, that's what you're rushing out of here for.
No, I'm not even. Well, Steven, how little you know about me, because our BBOTT coverage is going to be led by the great Jordan Parhar. He's going to be live tonight right after BBOTT after it airs and after they get a chance to watch it. I believe around 11 tonight, check your local listings for time and channel. It's up on robinswebsite.com. It'll be in your podcast feed tomorrow morning. Jordan and the live feed crew are going to recap the premiere of BBOTT coming up later on tonight on robinswebsite.com. And I'll get into BBOTT coverage on Friday once we get through all of the Survivor. Of course, PG coming into the studio tomorrow. So we're looking forward to your questions. You can email them, survivor@robinswebsite.com, for questions for PG about the season. And then Darnell Hamilton, get your voicemails in. robhasawebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP.
Stephen, pretty big week. It'll be a fun week.
Yes, it'll be a fun week.
And you got to ask PG. PG's a gamer. Ask her about the gamer stigma.
Okay. I'm sure it'll come up. So looking forward to
Because I told you to bring it up.
Yes, I wouldn't have thought of that. So good job, Stephen. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Hey, make sure in your blog this week, give somebody an award for playing the best.
Who gets the cesty, Rob? Who gets the cesty?
Who played the worst this week? Boy, it's tough to say who really did terrible. I mean, if you were going to give it to one person, I think you have to give it to Zeke for the blunder to tell Jay. And maybe we're laying it at the foot of Zeke. It's entirely possible that maybe more than one person might have said to Zeke, said to Jay that this was how the vote was going to be, and we're just scapegoating Zeke. So we'll see if we get more information from the secret scenes.
What did you think, Jeff? How do you think Jeff did at Tribal Council? You think he was good?
I thought he was a little soft on them. I really did. I thought that he should have, I like when Jeff is calling things out. And I do feel like that. I don't think it was that it was a conscious thing of Jeff. It's like, oh, the young people, I can't really go that hard on them. I get the sense that from hearing Jeff in the preseason that he really likes this group. So I think that he was enjoying this. That he's like, oh, look at these kids. This is so crazy. Whereas opposed to that, you know, where he has been harder on people in the past, where he feels like, I think that when you see Jeff really get tight at Tribal Council and get really mad, it's when people aren't giving him anything. And I think that he was he was excited, almost like the conductor, like coach, oh, we got a fight going on over here. They're talking about that they're hooking up. There's whispering going on over here. I think that he was just like really enjoying what he was getting out of this group. And I think that's why he wasn't killing them.
Right. He's executive producer of the whole show, but he's also tribal is his domain. And so for so much great chaos to be happening in his world, I think he probably was. I think you're probably right that he was excited. I thought he handled it so well. I thought it was so fun the way he let them go. Then he was conducting. You're right. Conductor's a great metaphor. Over here, these instruments. And okay, enough of that. Okay, over there. Okay, come in louder. I thought that was great.
Yeah. All right. Be sure to read Stephen's People blog. Follow Stephen on Twitter at Stephen Fishback to get that. And don't miss
what's the hashtag?
What's the hashtag tonight? That I don't have anything great. The only thing I wrote down was the Veil of Tears.
Okay, Veil of Tears.
All right, the Veil of Tears that Stephen Fishback perpetually has. Okay, so that's the hashtag for the episode tonight. Make sure you don't miss any of the podcasts. Subscribe. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. And I haven't said it at the top of the season, but we do greatly appreciate it when you leave us your feedback and your star ratings on our iTunes page. It helps more and more people find the show, especially at the start of the season. That's at robhasawebsite.com/iTunes.
Yes. 1 month till the live know-it-alls. I'm so excited.
Oh, my God. Yes, so we're inside 1 month, 4 weeks from tonight.
4 weeks.
Until October 26th. And I believe it's a sold out show at this point. But, looking forward to the after party as well, which we've done. And Stephen, we also added a Big Brother OTT live show that we're going to do the night before as well. So look for ticket information on that coming soon, everybody.
Wow, that sounds fun.
Yeah, Stephen, how much do we have to pay you to appear at a BBOTT live show? $2,000? Wow. Yeah.
I would do it for $2,000. Okay. Yeah, of course. Okay.
$1,000.
So this is a verbally binding agreement.
This is a negotiation. I'm just seeing.
Yeah. You just offered me $2,000 and I accepted.
No, and then I'm going down. Okay. All right, Stephen. All right. Have a good night. Thanks so much to Scott St. Pierre, who edits the Know It Alls podcast every week. So thanks again, Scott. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
Survive the Know It Alls.